Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter, from plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Our first guest today has written the shocking truth about post-war adoption in America, told through the bittersweet story of one teenager, the son she was forced to relinquish, and their search to find each other. Welcome to the show, Gabrielle Glazer.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Gabrielle, we're talking about the baby boom in 1960s America, where women were very much encouraged to stay home and raise families, but sex and childbirth were very much taboo subjects, I believe.
Absolutely. In the years after the war, in the early 60s, as you said, women had one role in the United States, and that was to produce a family as large as possible. And yet, there was very little birth control, even for married people. The sexual revolution was simmering, and there was no sex education. So not only married women got pregnant, about almost nearly 4 million young women who were unwed also found themselves pregnant.
And presumably, abortion wasn't legal.
That's absolutely right. Not until 1973 in this country.
So your story is about 16-year-old Margaret Earle, talking about 1961. She fell in love, or she thought she'd fallen in love, and became pregnant. Can you pick up the story from there?
Yes, absolutely. She, without any sex education, any knowledge of her body, Margaret had intercourse with the man she would go on to marry. They actually were in love. She was 16 years old, found herself pregnant, tried to hide the pregnancy from her mother, wasn't even sure that she, what was going on. She thought maybe she'd had too many milkshakes. She just was very, very, very uneducated about what had happened. And eventually she was found out. Her parents forced her to go to a secretive maternity home, and she was pressured into surrendering the son that she bore out of wedlock into a predatory and exploitative adoption system.
It's so sad. And you're quite right. I mean, they were in love because they did eventually get married, didn't they, later on, her and George?
They did. George Katz was her boyfriend, and they tried desperately to try to keep the baby, to try to convince New York City officials that they were fit parents, even as teenagers. George would come with Polaroid photographs of home goods that he had won at arcades with a pitcher's arm, but they were unable to convince anybody, certainly not adoption officials, certainly not New York City child welfare officials, that they were in any way capable parents. So the baby was taken from them.
And the sad thing is that it appears she was just a month away from her 18th birthday. And had it been a month later, presumably they couldn't take the child away.
Absolutely. But without any education about this, what was happening to them, without any lawyer present, they had no idea that Margaret, at the age of 18, would have had rights to try to keep her baby. But believe it or not, in New York State, until 1971, this was in 1962 by this time, a month shy of Margaret's 18th birthday. She gave birth in 1961, but almost 6 months later, she was nearly 18. She and George were allowed to see the baby at a city welfare agency, and Margaret was threatened with juvenile detention. And Yes. And it was unbeknownst to her, unbeknownst to many people, it was actually illegal in New York State to have premarital sex until 1971.
Oh, my
God. So the threat, yeah, the threat was not idle.
Crikey. That's hard to believe, isn't it, really, when you think
yes.
about it? And did they know where they'd taken him then, where her son vanished to?
No, not at all. She was told that the baby was about to be adopted by a diplomat that week. And so she envisioned in her fantasies for decades afterwards, certainly for the first 20 years or so of his life, of her son's life, who she called Stephen, that he was being raised in maybe France or Spain or Italy or Israel in glittering embassies and with every single advantage by this lovely worldly diplomat and his wife. But in fact, her son Stephen stayed in the foster care system for a good amount of time, was ultimately adopted by Romanian Holocaust survivors who happened to live six blocks away from Margaret and George in their first apartment in the Bronx.
Wow, how ironic. And I read that because Margaret did go on to have a baby girl in 64 and she took the baby to the park and she could quite possibly have seen her son playing there, couldn't she?
Absolutely. It was the park. It was a park that was equidistant between Margaret and George's apartment and the apartment of the Rosenbergs, the family who had adopted him.
Now, I know they never gave up hope of trying to find him, even years later, but it was made difficult because the original birth certificate had been sealed. Is that correct?
Yes. In the United States, beginning in the 1930s, adoption records began to be sealed. So that is to say that a child who was born and surrendered or forced to be surrendered for adoption was issued an original birth certificate that was sealed when the adoption was finalized. And the export version of that logic was that it would protect a child from the taint of illegitimacy. It would shield the mother from the threat of anybody ever finding out about her unwed pregnancy. But most importantly, it would protect adoptive parents from any fear that birth parents would come to interfere with their newly created family.
Right. Okay. So how did she eventually do it then? I know she had three children in the end, apart from who she called Stephen. In the 70s, she managed to start a process. How did she do that?
She began to search for his birth. It's sort of complicated, but she began to search for his records of his birth that she thought might yield clues to his adoptive name. She was unable to get any. She was really unable to get anywhere because of this system that I just mentioned, and also the lies that she had been told. She believed that he'd been adopted immediately in 1962, and that didn't happen until late 1963. He was almost three by the time the adoption was finalized. So she really was sort of at a crossroads, couldn't get any further. Ultimately, she went to the adoption agency when her son, Stephen, renamed David Rosenberg, was 20 years old. She went to give contact information at this agency, an elegant, well-respected agency in New York City, and they told her to go away, that they would call the police. And at that point, she had no recourse. She had no way of finding him. DNA tests were years away, and laws that did ultimately in New York State uncover or allow adoptees the right to access their original birth certificate, that wouldn't come until 2020. But in 2014, David Rosenberg had taken a DNA test that connected him to a distant cousin who was very, very adept at locating people, and she was able to find Margaret for David. Margaret had left her maiden name on Facebook as a potential clue so that her son might be able to find her one day, and he did. So they were able to meet in the summer of 2014, 3 months before he died of the very illnesses about which she had tried to warn him for decades. She had spent untold amounts of energy trying to leave clues and messages at the adoption agency about the illnesses that ran in the family tree.
Oh, that is the cruelest irony of them all, isn't it, that?
Yes, and they never pass them on.
Oh, bless the poor lady. Well, 3 months before he died, he was obviously looking for her as well. I can't imagine. I mean, presumably you've interviewed this lady, and I can't imagine how she coped with all that.
Oh yes, I got to know her very, very well. I'm in touch with her very, very frequently. She is a very strong person. She is she's a Jewish lady who's got a very, very deep, strong faith. She has suffered innumerable, immeasurable losses. That one at first, at the age of 17, her husband George ultimately died while waiting for a kidney. In I believe it was early 2000 or 2001, and David/Stephen also had suffered from diabetes. He had received a kidney donation from a friend and had a cascade of other illnesses, sort of that I don't need to get into. But she has chosen to believe that they were able to meet. Well, they did meet, but she's chosen to believe that, you know, and accept that David had a very good life. He had three beautiful children, a fabulous, energetic wife, he had a very, very, very rich existence. So she's reassured by that, and she's turning her energy into trying to help adoptees in 40 states in the United States access their original birth certificates so that they don't have to live in this kind of secrecy, not knowing.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And is she in touch with her grandchildren?
She is. She is. They live across the country from each other. She lives in New Jersey and they live in Oregon. But yes, they are in touch. And she has two other grandchildren as well.
Fantastic. Well, it's a very sad story, a bittersweet story, as we said in the beginning. But if you want to read the whole story, then we're selling it on our website. It's called American Baby, A Mother, A Child, and the Shadow History of Adoption. And it's by Gabriel Glazer, who is speaking to now. Gabriel, thanks for bringing her story to light a little bit. And when you speak to her, do give her my best.
I shall. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.